And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
As delegates trooped into Luther Tyndale's car park at Kentish Town in London for the first day of the 70th anniversary of the first ELCE Synod, they looked up and called to the sky, "Give us a sign! Give us a sign!" And lo, a sign did appear. Well, at least one hastily being hung from the roof over the door by two men wishing they did have wings instead of a flimsy-looking ladder. So Friday, the 1st of November's first day began with people from all of our Evangelical Lutheran Church of England congregations arriving to celebrate a very significant point in ELC history and to help build on the foundations laid by those who had gone before. The word synod comes from the Greek words syn, which means with, and hodos, which means path. The root meaning of synod is to walk together. The theme for this year's synod was always courageous. And over the past 70 years, many courageous decisions have been made to keep the word of the Lord being told and taught in his country with joy and love. We gathered for the opening service led by the Reverend Samiatz, the chairman of the ELCE, and a strong sermon on courage by the Reverend John Ehlers. I suspect that many people had not noted in their diaries that Friday was also the 507th anniversary of the Reformation, plus All Souls Day. Takes courage to admit you didn't know that. After greetings from around the world, the first session opened with a lay and pastoral perspective on courageous Christianity today. Lutheran, though used by those who have the joy to be one, is a name that is still little heard in the UK. The Executive Council reminded us that church health and safety checks are looming and will be on a three-year cycle. To register as independent charities, which still rumbles on, the Charity Commission have been asked to look at the ELCE constitutions in bulk. That has never been done before. Assuming they don't have the vapours, it's expected to finish next year. Other lessons learned? Never build a church in concrete. They crumble. The establishment of a church endowment fund in the ELCE Trust Limited was agreed with our world-renowned Westfield House in Cambridge, which will include the training of ELCE students for pastoral ministry and help support the ELCE. During the breaks, a film screen showed hundreds of photos of 70 years of activities, fun and worships by our congregation. In the evening, Pastor Didsiz Stilver sang his own version of Alleluia and did it very well indeed. There were songs, poems, Welsh spoken, and great celebration at Luther Tyndale. On the second day, Saturday, after an early matin service, the business of the day began again. Pastor Samiatz delivered his report as chairman of the ELCE, speaking of the courage shown by individuals and groups and our congregations over the years. Tackling bureaucracy, trying to reduce the lengths of vacancies in congregations, and how a call has recently gone out to one of our pastors. There was much, much more, of course, but the dear chap spoke faster than I can write. As ever, the ELCE gratitude for the churches of the European Lutheran Conference and the International Lutheran Council was passed unanimously and with pleasure. Westfield House, Lutheran Radio UK, and many boards and committees gave reports to eager listeners. Elections of the various officers took place, but from an international perspective, you may be interested to know that from 2025 at the next General Synod, the chairman of the ELCE will be Pastor Tapani Simeoki. Congratulations to him, and a massive thank you to Pastor George Samiatz, who has led us so well and so faithfully. Retirement housing scheme for pastors, the ELCE central budget, and all the things that have to be done to support the Lord's work in any church were dealt with in good order. Congregational reports were delivered by Luther Tyndale, Holy Trinity, St. Andrew's, Christ Church, St. Paul's, St. Peter's, St. David's, Resurrection, Redeemer, St. Columba, Good Shepherd, Our Saviour, and Ascension. I think it's been a long time since we had reports from all of our churches at a synod. Whether big or small, vacant or served by a pastor, there were two strong themes in all the reports. Thanks to God for his blessings and a courage shown to work as hard as possible to share his word in the local communities, despite any problems that occur. George Samiatz closed the synod with thanks to all those who have served in various offices and special thanks to Luther Tyndale for doing a great job as our hosts. We close with the message that we still have the 21st century version of the Great Commission, and the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. But God always gives us courage to go forward. The Princess of Wales has become more interested in faith since her cancer diagnosis this year, it has emerged. An updated royal biography by Robert Hardman has revealed that the Princess, 42, has begun to differ from her husband, Prince William, on matters of religion and faith since undergoing chemotherapy. The new chapters of Charles III, New King, New Court, The Inside Story, serialised by the Daily Mail, quotes a church-going friend of the family as saying things are more hopeful with Catherine's faith than William's more recently, writing that there'd been speculation within the wider royal orbit that the health crises faced by the family on two fronts this year may have drawn the heir to the throne closer to God. This was firmly denied by a source close to him. No change, of course, there, they told Hardman, with another source adding, he is a modern young man, and I think he gets embarrassed by certain aspects of ceremonial and religion. The prince's position reportedly remains that when the time comes for him, he will observe all his constitutional obligations to the Church of England. Hardman adds, however, that William will not suddenly become a regular worshipper or feign an enthusiasm for something that he does not feel personally, however bleak the situation. His father, who is Supreme Governor of the Church of England, has by contrast lent on his faith and spiritualism during his own cancer diagnosis earlier this year. The King is known to have been seeking support and spiritual advice from the Greek Orthodox monk Ephraim in the wake of his diagnosis and ongoing treatment. The monarch has been Supreme Governor of the Church of England for centuries, and powerful religious ties permeate the reign of William's father as they did for his grandmother. The King has been described as deeply religious by his youngest son, Prince Harry, in his memoir, and the monarch is well known to have championed all faiths throughout his working life. After he ascended the throne in September 2022, he pledged to protect the multiple faiths of a diverse Britain, no less diligently than Christianity, as head of the Church. Meanwhile, the late Queen's role as defender of the faith and supreme governor of the church was one that she felt closely connected to both in duty and personally. She would often speak of the strength she derived from her Christian faith. Hardman writes, however, that William has historically not shared his father's interest in faith and spiritualism, nor the late Queen's solid devotion to the Anglican Communion. It also emerged in the updated biography the concerns have been raised that the Prince of Wales lacks the odd wise old consigliere who might step in to point out a potential misstep. A cited veteran of the late Queen's era cited William's intervention in Gaza earlier this year as an example. The Prince's public statement, which at the time was said to risk a diplomatic rift with Israel, called for an end to the fighting in Gaza, saying that too many have been killed in the conflict. Hardman writes that though the heir to the throne statements were perfectly benign, they were also not entirely in line with government policy. At the time, it was reported that his intervention was backed by Number 10, which said the nation should speak with one voice. However, Hardman notes that senior Foreign Office sources now say that the prince's statement had not been authorised. One told him, "We were briefed it was happening, but we were certainly not asked in advance." The King once praised the Orthodox Church as the only Christians who are not corrupted by loathsome political correctness, a newly uncovered letter has revealed. In private correspondence from 1998, the then Prince of Wales admitted he felt more drawn to the timeless traditions of the Orthodox Church as he grew older. Writing to his friend Dudley Poplack, the late interior designer who worked closely with the royal family, the King said, "Personally, the older I get, the more I am drawn to the great, timeless traditions of the Orthodox Church." He added, "They are the only ones that have not been corrupted by loathsome political correctness." The King, who became Supreme Governor of the Church of England upon ascending the throne like his mother before him, has always had strong ties to the Greek Orthodox Church. His father, the late Prince Philip, was baptized a Greek Orthodox, though he later converted to Anglicanism before marrying Princess Elizabeth, the future Queen. To mark his paternal heritage, the monarch had a choir perform Psalm 71 in Greek at his coronation last May. He has also been seeking support and spiritual advice from Archimandrite Ephraim, a Greek Orthodox monk, in the wake of his cancer diagnosis earlier this year. In 2004, it was claimed that he was so enamored with the Orthodox faith that he adorned a section of his Highgrove home with prized Byzantine icons, many said to originate from the Mount, the Orthodox world's holiest site. Greek Orthodox Church worship focuses more on traditional sacrament and sacred scriptures as opposed to preaching and prayer. The newly uncovered letter comes as the Church of England has faced accusations of being consumed by political correctness and failing to stand up for Christian values over the past 20 years. The Church has come under criticism for its diversity, equality and inclusion initiatives and last year faced scrutiny for the establishment of a £100 million fund to address past wrongs of slavery during a time of financial crisis among parishes. In 2019, Dr. Gavin Ashenden, the late Queen's former chaplain, accused the Church of swallowing political correctness wholesale as he announced he was converting to Catholicism instead. The King has long maintained a deep fascination with all religious faiths, however, from Islam to Buddhism, and has worked to bring different faith leaders together. After he ascended the throne in September 2022, he pledged to protect the multiple faiths of a diverse Britain no less diligently than Christianity in his role as head of the Church. The King's typed letter, which has the Prince of Wales coat of arms stamped on the top, was written on August 24, 1998, while he was staying at Balmoral Castle and was marked private and confidential. In the same correspondence to Mr. Potblack, the King also criticised the move towards genetically modified GM crops or Frankenstein food. He wrote that the use of GM crops filled him with unutterable gloom and despair. The then Prince said he was resigned to the fact that money drives everything and wisdom has been banished in the face of seemingly unstoppable marketing. It was penned the same year that he first set out his public opposition to GM foods, when he said it takes mankind into realms that belong to God and to God alone. Mr. Potblack died in 2005, and the letter was one of several royal-related correspondences in his possession to go under the hammer at Lay's Auctions of Penzance, Cornwall. The cache of six letters was sold for more than £1,700. A spokesman for Lay said, "It is an interesting, candid and intriguing letter in which Charles expresses his despair at the prospect of GMO and his interest in the traditions of the Orthodox Church. The royal family aren't supposed to make political statements as a rule, certainly in public, but these remarks were made in private correspondence." Buckingham Palace said it does not comment on private correspondence. Protesters in Falmouth surreptitiously mounted a brass plaque beneath a memorial in a church rebuking a 17th century parishioner for his role in the slave trade. Anonymous activists installed the plaque in King Charles the Martyr Church under a memorial to local-born Thomas Corker, who worked for the Royal African Company in the late 1600s. The group hoped their unsanctioned handiwork would provide visitors with context and act as a protest. The plaque reads, "Thomas Corker was England's chief agent for the Royal African Company on York Island. He oversaw and profited from the kidnap, enslavement and sale of slaves. The Royal African Company shipped more enslaved men, women and children to the Americas than any other trading company in the world." Born in the late 16th century, Corker moved to the Guinea coast aged 14 and joined the English Trading Company, later becoming a chief agent on York Island, Sherbro, now Sierra Leone. The slave trader married an African chieftain's daughter with whom he had two sons, but died on a business trip to Falmouth in 1700, aged 30. The memorial was erected in the Grade II listed church by his elder brother Robert, who also donated to the church in 1708. Following a consultation in 2023 on the memorial's future, the Parochial Church Council, the PCC, said the tribute would remain, to the dismay of some activists. In an email to Cornwall Live, signed "Sincerely, the People of Falmouth," the anonymous activist claiming responsibility for the plaque said, "This is to give context to the memorial, which fails to acknowledge any of his history and instead glorifies his life. It added, although done as an act of protest, its intention as a donation to the church to give them the opportunity to acknowledge harms and inform the public in the assumption that this is what they would wish to do. One of the campaigners said, it appears that the church feels no duty to understand the role they are playing in upholding white supremacy and would rather bury their heads in the sand and dodge any accountability of the pain that the memorial causes. The church identified the church's £9 billion endowment fund as having been significantly financed by the transatlantic slave trade. Pip Horton, lay vice chair and PCC secretary at King Charles's Church, a member of the subcommittee involved with the Thomas Corker work, said an individual had erected the plaque without permission. She said, quite frankly, we don't feel this is helpful at all and detracts from the very good and inclusive work we are doing in partnership with others, including Black Voices Cornwall. We understand that some people may have concerns about what they see as a delay, but this is not helpful to our efforts and has caused unnecessary distress. The diocese said it was investigating what action would be taken, as owing to its Grade 2 listed status, the church is protected by law. The Right Reverend Hugh Nelson, acting Bishop of Truro, revealed the church considered installing a trigger warning. He said, the presence of a memorial to a man who benefited from trading human beings in a building that points to the God of justice and freedom is deeply troubling. Part of the discussion around what is displayed in relation to this memorial includes a trigger warning because of the sensitive nature of the topic, and we have a duty of care to all visitors. A spokesman for the Diocese of Truro said it was working closely with the community to find an honest description of Corker's involvement in slavery. In a statement they said, we also helped to tell the story of Joseph Emedy, a black musician and composer who was a freed slave who settled in Cornwall and already has a smaller memorial in the church, and to describe and challenge the evils of modern slavery. This has not been a quick process, but there has been a lot of energy and resources given to it, and we want to thank all those who are working with us through the proper channels to achieve a positive and enriching outcome. And finally, Pastor Jamie was telling stories about his grandfather, who could never bring himself to throw anything away. He died in the war, holding on to a grenade. Tragedy took his other grandfather, who died standing on a doormat. Pastor Jamie felt guilty, not explaining properly how a helter-skelter works. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.